All right. Thanks, Brooke. Again, my name is Carrie. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons Group in beautiful Bend, Oregon, and I'm currently living in the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. All right. We left off on, well, we didn't even get to the foreword of the first edition last time, but we're almost done with the preface. On the last page of the preface, the last thing that we left off on was going through the three parts of the stories that are in the back of the book. The Pioneers of AA obviously is part one of the stories, and that's for our history. You get to hear about our first AA members, and their stories. And then number two, they stopped in time for those who maybe need to identify. That haven't really, maybe aren't low bottom, and they are looking like, well, maybe I'm not a real alcoholic. There's a whole section that they can read. And then the third section is part three, which is they lost nearly all. And those are for the low bottoms who think, oh my gosh, like, yeah, maybe these guys can stop drinking, but what about me? Like, I am physically addicted to alcohol at this point. I don't know what I'm gonna do. And so, given those three parts of the stories, which really are for identification, right? They're speaker meetings in print. Then at the bottom of the page, it says all changes made because we've changed those stories around a little bit as far as taking old ones out and putting new ones in. I'm not going to read through all that. We're on the fifth edition that we're publishing now that's going to be coming out next year, and some of these stories will be updated with new ones. Maybe a story written by a Zoom baby or somebody got sober online only. I don't know, but whatever it is, all changes made over the years in this book, in the big book, AA members' fond nickname for this volume, have had the same purpose: to represent the current membership of Alcoholics Anonymous more accurately, and thereby to reach more alcoholics. If you have a drinking problem, first highlight, if you have a drinking problem, we hope that you may pause in reading one of these 42 personal stories and think, yes, that happened to me. Yes, that happened to me. Or more important, yes, I felt like that. Yes, I felt like that. Or most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. And that is the ultimate end goal, is that not the end goal of the tradition, not the end goal of working the steps, but the ultimate end goal of the first step is I'm screwed. Yeah, I have a drinking problem. Oh my God, me too. And oh my God, me too. That magic of me too, the entire foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous. So moving on to the foreword to the first edition. In my book, in the book that you guys are studying, and the book that this series is representing is this abridged big book. I call it the study edition. There we go. Bob just held it up. I call it the study edition because it's large print. It's super easy for studying. I'm here with, there's five of us here, five. Yeah. And you know, really we could probably all study off of this same book because it's large print, huge margins. It doesn't have any of the stories in the back, so it only includes what is meant to be studied, right? Not just read, but actually studied and dissected and taken apart. So that's what we're doing. So let's dissect, study, and take apart the foreword to the first edition. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I'm going to stop there because, again, we're going to be, this book uses the word recovered quite a bit. And this is saying that the first time the book used recovered is on the title page. And it says that this is the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And a lot of people, I think, bristle when they hear that because they don't understand that, no, it doesn't mean that I can drink with impunity, right? It means that I've recovered up here. And so it doesn't matter that I'm always going to be allergic to alcohol because I don't drink anymore. So why would it matter that my body will always be physically allergic because I have been restored to sanity? But this only happens as a result of the step. So where this says that we have Alcoholics Anonymous or more than 100 men and women who have recovered, what have we recovered from? A seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. What is that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body? That's alcoholism. Alcoholism is a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I know that when I got here, I wasn't 100% hopeless. And I hope that, I mean, this doesn't happen to for everybody, and it doesn't have to, but I was not hopeless. I was not granted that gift of desperation right away. I thought that I could do much better on my own. I wanted to rewrite the book. I wanted to update things. I wanted to upgrade the meetings. I had a bunch of ideas. For some reason, that did not work for me, right? I continued to get drunk. I finally got to the jumping off place at one point, and I got my butt beat up by a King Alcohol enough times to where I finally was granted that gift of desperation. I was hopeless, and nothing could help me until I reached that state of hopelessness. And that's why I really like the way that this is worded, because it's a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And so when I see, when I see a newcomer in the room, sometimes I want to offer them hope. And then I remember, no, the worst thing I can do is take away that hopelessness that they feel, because it's only through the hopelessness, that gift of desperation, that anybody's going to be willing to do these extreme measures, which are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, to show the next line says, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. So again, we're reading the black and not the white. And what this doesn't say is to show alcoholics kind of how we recovered is the main purpose of this book. But the word precisely is used. So I looked it up in the Big Book Dictionary, and precisely means exactly, specifically, and precise. So I'm one who appreciates the clear-cut instructions, the clear-cut directions that the Big Book offers. I know not everybody does, and whatever works for you, please keep doing. If your sponsor says something different than me, don't listen to me. That's why you have a sponsor. But for me, how it works for me is I'm a big book literalist, and I need very specific, exact, and precise instructions, or I'll find a loophole. And I love finding loopholes. The loopholes just don't like me. So, with that said, for them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. You mean not drop the rock? No further authentication will be necessary. You mean not even the 12 and 12? No further authentication will be necessary. Wow. Okay. So the steps must be in this book. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. I love that, the humility in that, right? I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous didn't come up with these spiritual principles. These spiritual principles have been around for thousands of years. Men of religion have been using them. Tons of different people have been using these spiritual principles. They have their advantages for all. You don't have to be an alcoholic, to live a life based on spiritual principles. But if you're an alcoholic of my type, I have to live a life based on these spiritual principles. So whereas other people get an option, I don't have an option. This is my only option. I'm going to fast forward real quick to the very bottom of that page. We are not an organization in the conventional sense of the word. That's a little bit of tradition nine for those of you who are making P&S notes. So I'll mention P9 there. S notes are for steps. This is T9. A conventional organization is usually at the top of the organization is the president or the CEO or whatever. And then below, right, falls all of the people that work for them and then the people that work for them. Alcoholics Anonymous is exactly the opposite. It's upside down, right? So on top are the groups, and the groups tell the districts what to do. The districts tell the area what to do, and the area tells the trustees and the board and the delegates what to do, because we are not an organization in the conventional sense of the word. We are exactly the opposite. We're a backward organization. We're an upside down organization, which is something really cool and special. So that's tradition nine. And then there are no dues or fees whatsoever. That sounds a lot like tradition seven. Now, remind you, this is the foreword to the first edition. That means that this page was written 10 years before the traditions were ever even thought of. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. That sounds a lot like tradition three. We are not allied with any particular faith, sect, denomination. Kind of sounds a lot like tradition six. Nor do we oppose anyone. Kind of sounds a lot like tradition 10. We have no opinion on outside issues, right? We neither endorse nor oppose anyone. Simply, we wish to be helpful to those who are afflicted. Tradition five. That's our one primary purpose. I'm skipping over to forward to the second edition. One, two pages in. So on my study edition, it's page XII. Middle of the paragraph. Though he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford groups, this is Bill after he, well, I guess I'll read some of this. The spark that was to flare into the first AA group was struck at Akron, Ohio in June 1935 during the talk between New York stockbroker and Akron physician. So you guys know that New York stockbroker is our co-founder, Bill W., and the Akron physician is our co-founder, Dr. Bob. 6 months earlier, the broker, Bill, had been relieved of his drink obsession by a sudden spiritual experience following a meeting with an alcoholic friend who had been in contact with the Oxford groups of that day. That's Ebby, right? He had also been greatly helped by the late Dr. William D. Silkworth, a New York specialist in alcoholism, who is now accounted no less than a medical saint by AA members, and whose story of the early days of our society appears in the next pages. From this doctor, the broker had learned the grave nature of alcoholism. So the Dr. Bob learned of the grave nature of alcoholism through the broker, through Bill, even though he had been in the Oxford groups. Dr. Bob had actually been in the Oxford groups for 2.5 years, although he couldn't even get 2.5 days sober. But they were basically the same tenets. They were basically the same spiritual principles. What was missing? Well, we'll find out. Though he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford groups, this is Bill now. He was convinced the need for moral inventory, there's one of them, because there were six tenets, confession of personality defects, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and the necessity of belief in a dependence upon God. Those were the ones that Bill said, okay, I can deal with those ones. Those were the ones that he was convinced of, although he wasn't convinced of all of them. So prior to the journey in Akron, the broker had worked hard with many alcoholics on the theory, this is Bill still, that only an alcoholic could help an alcoholic. If you want to highlight that again, only an alcoholic could help an alcoholic. That's T5. But he had successfully only only how he had succeeded only in keeping sober himself. This is after 6 months. The broker had gone to Akron on a business venture, which had collapsed, leaving him greatly in fear. So, real quick, so he had been sober for 6 months, Bill Wilson, and he knew that helping another alcoholic is how he could stay sober. And if anybody watched the movie, what is it? My Name Is Bill, or if anybody read Lois Remembers or any of that type of stuff, you hear a lot where Bill was really beating himself up because, I mean, let's be honest, Bill was the worst 12-stepper in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous for his first 6 months sober. And he was like 0 for 40, right? I mean, he just kept striking out. He couldn't help anybody, and he's complaining to Lois about that, his wife, and everybody knows the big line, the big highlighted line that everybody remembers about that movie when Lois says, "Oh, but Bill, you're sober. You know, for the first time in your life, you're sober. So keep doing what you're doing." Well, that would be wonderful. That is wonderful that Bill found a way to stay sober. And that's wonderful for Lois. But you know who that wouldn't be wonderful for? The rest of us. So Bill needed to get his crap together. Bill needed to learn how to 12-step. Because although, yes, it's wonderful for Lois that there's a way that her husband's going to stay sober, continue striking out with drunks. Who's going to 12-step the next drunk? I mean, Bill staying sober doesn't give anything to Alcoholics Anonymous. So Bill has the same conversation with Dr. Silkworth. This can be found on page 43 of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. And Bill's having the same conversation with Silkworth. And Bill's like, "I'm having nothing but failure." And Silkworth is like, "Well, Bill, what are you doing?" And Bill described his pitch, you know, telling him about the white light experience. And, "Oh my gosh, I was a helpless, hopeless drunk. And then the windows blew open and the window wasn't even open and the sash was moving. And all of a sudden God removed my alcoholism." And Silkworth is like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, gear down, big rig." Okay. First of all, your weird white light experience is probably creeping him out. Like, no wonder nobody's getting sober. He says, "Bill, you got the cart before the horse. You got to talk to these people. You got to break their ego down. You got to talk to them about the physical factor and the mental obsession, the physical allergy that instead of getting quenched, you get more thirsty, and the mental factor that keeps them continuing to go back to the drink. Once you get that magic of me too, once you have cracked that ego deep down, then and only then can you try out the other medicine, the spiritual medicine that you learned at the Oxford groups." So a few days later, no more than a week, Bill is at the in Akron, right? And he hasn't yet had this new an opportunity to try out his new method of 12-step. You guys know who his new the first opportunity he had was? It was Dr. Bob. And so he's in Akron on a business venture, which had collapsed, leaving him greatly in fear that he might start drinking again. He suddenly realized that in order to save himself, he must carry his message to another alcoholic, because that's the only way he stayed sober for 6 months so far, right? That alcoholic turned out to be the Akron physician. And this physician, who had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcohol dilemma, but had failed. So Dr. Bob was going to the Oxford groups. Dr. Bob had all the means and necessities at his disposal. And he couldn't get sober. But when the broker gave him Dr. Silkworth's description of alcoholism and its hopelessness, the physician began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. He sobered up never to drink again up until the moment of his death in 1950. This seemed to prove, here's a highlight, that one alcoholic could affect another alcoholic as no non-alcoholic ever could. And that is because in the Oxford groups, they had the spiritual remedy. They just didn't have the magic of Me Too yet. They didn't have identification. They had people in the Oxford groups trying to quit gambling, trying to quit having sex with people that weren't their spouse, trying to quit being gay, trying to all of these different things, trying to quit doing drugs, trying to quit, and there wasn't that magic of Me Too. And this thing wasn't going to work until singleness of purpose was found, right? And so when Bill went over to Dr. Bob's house, and Dr. Bob's like, "Oh my gosh, not another person talking to me about my drinking." And instead, Bill said, "I don't want to talk to you about your drinking. I want to talk about mine. Like, I tell Lois I'm going to be home by 9 o'clock, and I'm not home until the next morning, sometimes not even a couple days later. And that's not my intent." And Dr. Bob went, "Me too." And Bill says, "And sometimes I get so drunk, I pee my pants." And Dr. Bob said, "Me too." And that magic of Me Too was born that Mother's Day, 1935, right? And that's the day that the magic of Me Too was able to bust through that alcoholic ego and give Dr. Bob, how does it say here, the willingness to pursue the spiritual remedy that they already had for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. Moving on, it also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to one day at a time recovery. Doesn't say that. It says that it also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. That's a promise of this program. That's what this book promises me. This book promises me that if I do this work and continue to work with others and to continue to give it away, I will keep it. And it promises permanent recovery. That's a quote. Permanent sobriety is another quote, but nowhere in here does it say one day at a time. Nowhere in here does it say just for today. What it says is for once and for all. That's another quote. For good and for all. That's another quote. Permanent recovery. Hence, the two men set to work almost frantically upon alcoholics arriving in the ward upon of the Akron City Hospital. You can see Dr. Bob and Bill just so excited because they finally found the solution and now they got to go find another prospect, right? Their first case, a desperate one, recovered immediately. That magic of Me Too happened because now they know that they got to talk about themselves. They got to talk about the physical allergy and the mental obsession. Their case, a desperate one, okay, recovered immediately and became AA number three. This is Bill for those who are taking notes. Bill D. He never had another drink. This work at Akron continued through the summer of 1935. There were many failures, but there was an occasional heartening success. When the broker turned to New York in the fall of 1935, the first AA group had actually been forged, though no one realized it at the time. The second small group promptly took shape at New York. So that's Bill's home group, right? So we got Dr. Bob's home group, group number one in Akron, which was the King School, group number one, and it's still going on today. And then you got the second AA group, which is the one that took place in New York, to be followed by in 1937 with the start of a third in Cleveland, and that was Clarence S's home group. Besides these, there were scattered alcoholics who picked up the basic ideas in Akron or New York, and who were trying to form groups in other cities. By late 1937, the number of members having substantial sobriety time behind them was sufficient to convince the membership that a new light, oh, I just got chills, a new light had entered the dark world of the alcoholic, right? Because for thousands of years, since men first crushed grapes, We've been locked up. We've been killed. Nobody's known what to do with us. There hasn't been a solution. And for the first time in the world, in centuries, we have a solution. It was now time the struggling groups thought to place their message and unique experience before the world. This determination bore fruit in the spring of 1939 by the publication of this volume. The membership had reached about 100 men and women. The fledgling society, which had been nameless, now begun to be called Alcoholics Anonymous from the title of its own book. The Flying Blind period, which is another highlight for me, ended, and AA entered a new phase of its pioneering time. So the Flying Blind period is a period of time where there was no clear-cut instructions. People were just taking other people through these steps based on how they were taken through the steps, right? There was no big book. That's why in 1939, with the publication of this volume, we finally have an instruction manual. We finally have a clear-cut process of what to do. And I don't know if you guys have ever played telephone. Did we go over that last week? The telephone? Like when you were a little kid and the game is, I don't know, when we would have slumber parties, I would make up a story, right? If it was my turn, and I would whisper it to the person sitting to my left, and she would whisper it to the person sitting to her left, and she would whisper it to the person sitting to her left. And by the time it got all the way around to Jen would say it out loud, and it didn't sound anything like the original story, right? And could you imagine what AA would have been or not been if we just relied on that game of telephone? So instead of flying blind, we finally had a book. We finally had some clear-cut instructions. So with the appearance of the new book, a great deal began to happen. Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick, poor guy, the noted clergyman, reviewed it with approval. In the fall of 1939, Fulton Osler's then editor of Liberty printed a piece in his magazine called Alcoholics and God. This brought a rush of 800 frantic inquiries. And this is just going to be telling us, you know, then there's the John D. Rockefeller, story about how the Rockefeller actually, we wanted money from them. And then they gave us the two thumbs up about, yeah, we have your back. And then Jack Alexander actually wrote an article in the Saturday Evening Post. And that was amazing because Jack Alexander was kind of a detective reporter. What is it called? Investigative reporter. So Jack Alexander, he made a lot of money for exposing people, right? He never took a case that he thought wasn't worth some money, right? And he was, his whole job was to investigate and to expose. And Alcoholics Anonymous was his first case, and he was good at it. His first case ever that he took, that he had nothing to expose. And not only did he have nothing to expose, he was so over the top shocked. He wrote the article anyways and said, these people really have nothing that they're trying to get. Like, there is no profit motive. Like, they just want to help other people. Who does that? In what universe would this even happen? And so he wrote the article. And I mean, it was huge, right? Because Jack Alexander doesn't write articles that end well. And this was his only happily ever after article that Jack ever wrote. And it was about Alcoholics Anonymous. Jack got to go on 12-step calls with them. He went to meetings with them. It was beautiful. So at the end of this page, right before we go on to page XV, it says our society then entered a fearsome and exciting adolescent period. So the adolescent period and these different periods I'm going to have you guys highlight. So first we had the flying blind period. Now we have the adolescent period. And the adolescent period is the one where, you know, when you're an adolescent and you're learning how to walk, you stub your toe and you fall down. You run into stuff and you fall down, right? And you learn how to do it better. And that's what we had to do before we acquired the 12 traditions. And so we made a lot of mistakes in these first 10 years, before we had the 12 traditions. So the test that it faced was this: could these large numbers of erratic alcoholics successfully meet and work together? Would there be quarrels over membership, leadership, money? Would there be strivings for power and prestige? Would there be schisms which would split AA apart? Soon AA was beset by these very problems on every side and in every group. But out of this frightening and at first disturbing experience, disrupting experience, the conviction grew that AA had to hang together or die separately. Now, here we go. Here's with the highlights. Ready? You guys get your pens out, get your markers out. We had to unify our fellowship or pass off the scene. So tradition one, we had to unify. That is the goal of the 12 traditions. That's a purpose of them. Like, if we didn't unify, if we didn't figure out how to work together and serve together and grow together and live together as a society, then there's going to be nothing for the future alcoholics. So we had to unify. So how do we do that? That's the goal, tradition one, unify. As we discovered the principles by which the individual alcoholic could live, that's the 12 steps, right? So we had to evolve principles by which the AA groups and AA as a whole could survive and function effectively. It was thought that no alcoholic men or women could be excluded. Sounds like tradition three, right? So T3 from our society. T2, that our leaders might serve, but never them. T4, that each group was to be autonomous and there was to be, okay, sorry, that each group was to be autonomous. T8, that there was to be no professional class of therapy. T7, that there were no fees or dues. Our expenses were to be met by our own voluntary contributions. T9, there was to be the least possible organization, even in our service centers. T11, our public relations were based on attraction rather than promotion. It was decided that all members ought to be anonymous at the level of press, radio, TV, and films, and in no circumstances should we give endorsements, make alliances, or enter into public controversy. T10. This was the substance of AA's 12 traditions, which are stated in full on page. It's funny, my book isn't updated. It says 561 of this book, but I'm sure your guys' is newer than mine and it probably has the right page. 178. Okay, thank you. So though none of the principles had the force of rules or laws, I was just talking about this earlier. We just came from the Oregon State Young People's of Alcoholics Anonymous Conference, and you know, of course, there were some issues. And what's cool is we started on this conversation about the traditions, and I'm so glad that they're not rules or laws, because quite frankly, you know, yes, I've recovered from alcoholism. I have not recovered from humanism. And sometimes I'm defiant. And sometimes I think rules are meant to be broken. And sometimes I think laws can be paid off. Between Davey and I, Davey's here, he's from my home group, and at our home group, there's a maximum of 2 hour parking. So we're always getting tickets, all right? Parking tickets. We just go pay them off. Laws can be paid off. Rules can be broken. Spiritual principles, my life actually depends upon those. Thank God these are not just rules or laws that can be paid off or broken. These are spiritual principles. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous is something that I have to sacrifice my personal ambition for our common good on a daily basis. While the internal difficulties of our adolescent period were being ironed out, remember our adolescent period was when we're falling down, right? Public acceptance of AA grew by leaps and bounds. For this, there were two principal reasons: the large number of recoveries and the reunited homes. They made their impressions everywhere. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, and I'm glad they put that in there. 50% got sober at once and remained that way. Permanent recovery. 25 sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder of those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. Other thousands came to AA, to a few AA meetings, and at first decided they didn't want the program, but a great deal of numbers of these, about 2 out of 3, begun to return as time passed. I'm skipping down to the bottom of the page. At present, our membership is pyramiding at the rate of about 20% a year. So far, upon the total problem of several million actual and potential alcoholics in the world, we have made only a scratch. In all probability, we shall never be able to touch more than a fair fraction of the alcohol problem in all of its ramifications. Con therapy for the alcoholic himself, surely we have no monopoly. Yet it is our great hope that all of those who have yet found no answer may begin to find one in these pages, in the pages of this book, and will presently join us on the high rate, on the high road to a new freedom. Kind of botched that, and I like to read it better, but it is what it is. But I do like where it says we have no monopoly. And I appreciate that about my 12th step, because I used to offer a lot of frothy emotional appeals, right? I used to my first 24, we'll call them victims. I called them sponsees, but I would tell them about all their yets as I'm dragging them off of the bar stool. And I would there was just a lot of if you don't come do AA, you're gonna die, right? Like, it's AA or die or death. And it's not true. And even for the ones that are true, they need to go out and experience pain themselves. And so for me, if somebody wants to do smart recovery, refuge recovery, a different, church, I say amazing. Yes, go try it. And you know what? I'm not gonna talk down about that. I know people who got sober in church. They might not be an alcoholic of my type, but how am I gonna know that you're not? How am I going to know that you also aren't an alcoholic of my type, right? And so when they go off and try smart recovery or refuge recovery or one of these non-12-step based fellowships, and they get sober, which I haven't seen happen a whole lot, but I have seen it happen. We have their numbers in my phone for when I run into somebody who also wants to do that, because we have no monopoly. And for all I know, these people need to go and check off all of the boxes that they need to check off the way that I did. I got to go and check off all the boxes of things that didn't work until I finally was willing to come to this last house on the block and try Alcoholics Anonymous. And who am I to take that away from someone else? Plus, if I tell somebody, I told you so, I told you so, they're not going to come back to me. I'm going to be a safe person and remain somebody effective who isn't going to shame somebody for, I'm not going to say, hey, if you go try something else, good luck with that. Let me know how it goes. If I do that, I'm going to be the last person they call when they need help. If I say genuinely, let me know how it goes, because if that does work, I would love to send people to you later on. And they're going to be able to come to me. They're going to be able to feel safe with that. Okay. So forward to the third edition, bottom of the page. So I can't say these things because I don't read well. So you're going to have to bear with me. I don't even like to read this, and it would be a personal preference to skip this part, but it's really important. So the 12 steps that summarize the program may be called Los Doce Pasos in one country and Les Doce Etapas in another. Here's the part that I want to read. But they trace exactly, not closely, not similarly, exactly the same path to recovery that was blazed by the earliest members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in spite of the great increase in the size and the span of this fellowship, at its core, it remains simple and personal. Each day, somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another alcoholic, sharing experience, strength, and hope. And that's where we get the experience, strength, and hope. And that's where we get the one alcoholic with another alcoholic.
All audio and video files on the District 6 AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.